Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Bhutang dhammang sanghang namassami. I think it was about day 3 or maybe even day 4 of this retreat that it occurred to me I hadn't noticed the crucifix at the front of the hall or if the stations of the cross were still around the room. And I thought, that's interesting, because the first retreat I did here, I saw them all the time. And it's kind of like, I think I've done 3 or 4 retreats now in Ursula Hall, and that's enough to have just blocked that out of my field of vision now. I've become so accustomed to it. And it got me thinking that many people here, probably most people here, have been practicing for many years. I think sometimes when we do anything for a long time, there's the danger that that can happen in our practice, that the things that are important, that we really want to be keeping track of, we become somewhat numb to, because it becomes so much of our routine. It's like any routine, in a way. And so we have to always be checking in with ourselves and bringing things in that freshen it up. Maybe switching, maybe picking something to be focusing on over a period of time as our main reflection, and picking that up for a determined amount of time. And then at some point, you know, noticing in that time also, are we able to keep it fresh? Are we able to keep bringing different perspectives into it? How are we holding it? Are we becoming routine with it? Or is it becoming just a habit? I think we can see this in retreat. We can start to see this we're getting reminders all the time to pay attention to our meditation. We can start to see how we do that as soon as we sit down to meditate. What's the tendency? What's our normal of habit that we slip into? And we're getting a lot of reminders for how to pay attention to that, things to look for, things to focus in on, things to drop. But in about 3 days, we'll be going back out into the world, and there will be a shift in our energies. And we'll start to be into our daily routine, which is even a bit more of a challenge because things move at a nice pace here. But when we get out there, sometimes things hit us pretty fast. We have to be on our toes. And it's much easier to slip into our habits, our habitual tendencies, our routines. So we have to always be bringing into our practice out of formal retreat. We have to be bringing in new things that freshen it up, little new reminders, new ways of remembering. Investigating what habits do we have that are useful. I'm thinking of Ajahn Kurundamo's talk yesterday. What would be useful to put down and what would be useful to pick up? It's not always easy to see them. But if we keep bringing it alive and bringing that into our hearts and into our consciousness, maybe at the end of the day, review the day and try to recall. How did the day go? Are there any high points where things went really well, where the Dhamma really was there for? I was really present in the Dhamma in the way I reacted to that situation or held that situation. Or did I lose it? Did I lose the picture and slip into some kind of habit or pre-assessment of what was going to happen. It's a real challenge. It's a challenge in the world, it's a challenge in the monastery, any place where you're interacting with other people, especially when you're interacting with other people in life situations that are very day-to-day, so they're repeated all the time, so that we lose that freshness of view and we kind of become numb to some of the things that are happening around us or some of the things that we're doing, how we're holding it. In July, I went to kind of a orientation with my father. It was just kind of a summarization of pre-dementia, Alzheimer's, just symptoms, just to help people assess in the elderly how they're doing. Because my dad's having some short-term memory issues. And so the first step in that process was just for them to give information about those conditions. And one thing that really struck me in what somebody said is that if you can do something every day for about 3-week period, it becomes habit. So that can be a useful tool. And for someone like my dad who's got some short-term memory issues, if we could get him into a routine that repeats itself daily, he does very well with that. If he can do that for 3 weeks, he can take on these certain habits and hopefully they'll define his day. But likewise, we can also slip into some bad habits, and if we do those over a period of time, we don't even notice that we're doing them anymore. They become the natural flow, the natural routine in our life. So I think our practice is always a challenge, and especially when one has been doing it for a long time. There's the danger of assuming that we know what's going on, assuming that we've read a lot of books, we've heard a lot of talks. Are we sure when we're understanding something that it's in the heart and not just cerebral? And how do we assess that? What do we use to know if we're really paying attention, if we're really taking it in and learning and deepening our understanding of ourselves and the way our minds work and our habitual tendencies? So, of course, the main one that comes to mind is if there's suffering. I remember my first year at Abhayagiri, and I was kind of pondering greed, hatred, and delusion. And okay, greed, I could see how you could pretty much assess whether there was greedy mind or not. And hatred, that's pretty apparent. If there's anger, aversion, it can be extreme, it can be subtle, but you can usually get a pretty good sense of the flavor. But delusion, I just couldn't wrap my mind around that. So I went to Lumpur and I said, if you're deluded, how do you know you're deluded? And he got this grin on his face, as he does. He said, well, you're suffering. There's still suffering. And it was like, oh. So, you know, these things sound so simple and so easy. And at some level, they are. We don't have to complicate them. But it's also easy to miss them. And sometimes we don't even realize we're suffering. So I was thinking of some of the ways that one example is I've noticed before, and one change that I've seen in my own practice is some things that used to just send me spiraling downward. A similar thing can happen now, and it doesn't carry me quite so far. I catch it a little bit sooner. Some things maybe I catch very soon, and they don't spiral me at all, but, you know, still on the path, and some things still carry me a little ways before I really get that attentiveness there. And I've noticed that So at the monastery, sometimes things can come at me fast because I'm in the office and people come to me for different things. And so I'm having to sometimes multitask. And I'm pretty good at it, fortunately. somebody can come in, I'm in the middle of something, and maybe they're not aware that I'm in the middle of something and start talking. I'm just making an example. Just start asking me what they want to ask, and I'm in the middle of some thought about where that number for the funds are, and I have to kind of drop it, and there's a bit of irritation. But I turn, try to respond to the question, and then look and go, okay, well, there was a bit of irritation, but that's gone. And then it's okay. And then somebody will come in not long later, and the similar thing will happen, and there will be a little irritation. And the same thought will arise, well, okay, it's a little irritation, but it's really not that bad. And then maybe the third person comes in and does it, and then it's like, that little irritation all of a sudden is not just a little irritation. And I've looked at that, and I've wondered, well, maybe what I'm doing when I think I'm, you know, really putting it down, what I'm doing is I'm just kind of putting it on a different shelf. And then the next one comes, and I'm putting that on a different shelf. And I think I've put it down. And then pretty soon the shelves are full, and the next one comes, and then I realize, right, I haven't put it down. And those things are good, because that's how we know what we need to start paying attention to. And so those are our worthy opponents that we can take on. But it's an interesting one. You have to really think of ways that you can, how can I get it so that I pause enough to see if I'm really putting it down, or to really, what does that feel like in the body? Oftentimes we don't have, things are happening so fast you don't have time to really take that consideration. So you just work with it the best you can. But that's always an interesting one to me. And another one that I've really been aware of over the years is every summer we each get a 2-week self-retreat. And I actually fast for that self-retreat so that I don't have to go near the office. I don't have to see anybody if I don't want to. And I found this great fast that gives me energy, and I can, it's just that maple syrup lemon juice one. It gives me energy, feels good. I do really well on it, and I can do it for about 10 days, and it gives me a lot of solitude, and I still have energy. So that's what I do, and the retreats are just delightful. And metta, I've had this experience where so much metta on the retreat, and then I'll come out and it'll be within 30 seconds of interaction, and I'm already like aversion or irritation is coming up. And I don't think that's unusual. I think, you know, that's why Ajahn Chah was such a proponent of community as a part of practice. Really taking that on and being grateful for the mirrors that surround us in community. So the next retreat, I'll do that, and I'll say, okay, now last time. And maybe I'll get to 1 minute before something irritates me, or I see something, why are they doing that? And, you know, it's just the habits of mind, just the habits of mind. But these are the things that are really useful to step back and try to figure out how can we take a fresh look at things so that we can find out what our habitual tendencies are. What have we slipped into in our routine? We all do it. Is there something that we can do? What kind of practice can we do to help us to bring that eye of Dhamma into it, and to bring awareness into it in a fresh way? This morning when we were chanting the Mangala Sutta, it's one of my favorite suttas, and one time when I was on self-retreat, I used to use my walking meditation period a lot when I was on self-retreat to memorize the Paritta chants or other chants. And one retreat, I focused on the Mangala Sutta. And so every day I picked a verse, and I wanted to learn the Pali and the English. I'm not a Pali scholar, so I can't tell you each Pali word what it means, but I wanted to have a sense of what the Pali verse was saying without the word-to-word translation, but just the sense of the meaning. And it was a really very fruitful thing to do. And I think this is the kind of thing that we can bring into every day. You could take, this chanting book is just rich with Dhamma reflections. The morning chanting is just rich. And yet even that can become rote and routine, and you just start doing a chant and you're not even aware of what you're saying sometimes. You can be thinking about what you have to do later if someone else is leading. If you're leading, it's a different story. But, you know, like taking a verse in a sutta that really touches you, that's a good place to start, is a sutta that kind of clicks when you chant it. To pick that up and take certain portions of it and carry those portions through the day and recite them to yourself and reflect on them through the day when you have a moment to pause. That's just something I find really useful. The advantage, too, is that when I'm in the world and I'm doing things, activities, sometimes those verses will pop up at just the right time. Just as I'm starting to lose it, I'm about to say something, and then the verse will come up about mindful of our speech, being gentle and truthful in our speech, or patient. And then if I have done something and somebody's expressing, because we do live in community, so sometimes you step on someone's toes and someone's expressing how I've stepped on their toes, that willingness to accept one's faults and reflect on that and see, is there something I can do to change that, or what was happening at that time when that happened. I picked the Mangala Sutta. I actually opened the book because my memory is so pathetic. But I was just, it's on, such a rich chant. Speech that is true and pleasant to hear. So I can ask myself after I've had an interaction with someone, was I able to hold that? Or where might I have gone away from that? And how could I have done that differently? So we're not in doing these things in a way to judge ourselves or to beat ourselves up, but kind of to help lift ourselves up, bolster ourselves up, encourage ourselves, bring in some kind of reminder that's going to help us to see the things, or to remind us of what our aspirations are. Anyway, that's just one example of a chant. There's the Metta Sutta. There's another one of my favorite chants is a sharing of blessings. And sometimes I'll start the day, and I don't do it every day, but I'll start the day and I'll think, okay, I don't know what this day is going to bring me, but I aspire to be skillful in my speech, in my actions, and I share any merit that comes from that with whomever I decide that in particular I want to share that with. And then that kind of is a way of bringing it in. You're not just, it's kind of taking it out of the sphere of me. It's helping me do that in relation to someone else as well. And sometimes that's a very skillful, helpful thing to take on. Oftentimes, it just makes me think, oftentimes you hear a lot about metta, and you hear a lot about karuna, compassion, and you hear a lot about equanimity, but sometimes we don't hear so much about mudita. And that's another one I've tried to focus in on at times. That feeling joy in the goodness in others, or in the spiritual success of others, or just the good things that happen for others. You don't really get away with doing one Brahma-Vihara without touching on the other ones, I don't think. But it's sometimes nice to hone in on things like that. And that's not always easy. I mean, especially out in the world, sometimes, you know, we do compare ourselves to others, and it's, how come the good things always happen to them? Things like that sometimes creep in there. So it's kind of just reminders, well, wow, that must feel really nice. How would that feel if that happened? That would feel really good. I'm so happy that they're having that feeling. Just the different techniques we can bring in. There's a time for metta. We always, as Lungpor was talking about, I think it was this morning, we have to find ways of balancing out, figure out what the mood of the mind is. Requires a lot of honesty. Sometimes that's not easy. When we've been practicing a long time, we like to think that we understand metta fully, or we're sensitive, that our sphere of view is wide, that when we're mindful, we're not just on this one thing, we're actually, it's a broad mindfulness. And then sometimes we fall short of that. We're human beings. So how do we find balance? It's kind of like always remembering to check in, especially in those situations that are so routine. So having something that reminds us to check in. What's the mood of the heart right now? When that first person leaves after they've come in my office and I've lost track of what I finally got my mind onto and got organized, and what's the mood, if I stop, what's the mood of the mind right now? Where do I feel that? What does that feel like? And how can I, not in a forceful way, but how can I bring something other in? How can I pick something else up that's going to help to shift that into a more skillful place? So maybe when that next person comes in, I haven't just stuck it on a shelf. My shelves won't get too full. And yes, we make mistakes and have to be willing to make them. That's how we learn, by reviewing mistakes, reviewing when something didn't go quite the way we thought it would. That happens all the time. So picking up things like metta, picking up mudita, taking in compassion. I often think in terms of contraction and expansion. So when you're driving and you're in traffic, a really good place to check in is right in the solar plexus. Is it contracted? Can you soften it? Are we trying too hard? Are we contracted? Or is, like, when I come off retreat and I'm feeling all that metta, is that too expansive? How do I find the balance in that again? Just ways of reviewing. Ways of honing in. Ways of bringing a freshness into it. And we have to be very creative sometimes. Things get pretty routine at the monastery. We get up, we have 5 o'clock morning puja, we have a chore at 6:30, we have light breakfast at 7, we have a work period, we have a morning meeting at 7:30, and I know the routine by heart. So am I missing things when I get in that routine? Am I already assuming that what this is going to be like and what's going to happen? Or am I really being open to the moment to really see what's going on around me, see what's going on within me? I think it's something we have to check in all the time and see where are we missing that full awareness. Because we kind of miss the point a lot because we think we know. We think we know what the day is going to be like. We think we know what that person's going to be like. Sometimes we already have identified exactly what each character is going to be like, what we have to watch out for in them, what how they're going to irritate me next. And we're forgetting to, one, to take into account that this whole concept of instability and impermanence, it's true with people too. They don't always do the same things. And are we just seeing those things because that's our habitual tendency, or is that perhaps what's really going on? Or, you know, we have to question these things and keep those questions fresh. When I first came back from years ago, traveling in Asia, and it's when I came across Buddhism, and then I spent a year in England. So I was gone about a year, just a little over a year and a half. And I came back, and I was so enthusiastic about Buddhism because it was so new, and everything was so fresh still. And I came back, and I have a big family. I have five brothers and a sister. And when the family got together, we used to get together every Sunday for Sunday dinner. And I just started looking at how I already had everybody pegged for who was going to do this and who was going to do that, and how that really irritated me. It was kind of like coming back with some meditation behind me, some perspective of the Buddhist teachings. I was coming in with a different set of glasses, and it was so fresh. It was so revealing because I saw, wow, I've already got that brother. He's already going to irritate me. I'm already ready for it. But what if that's not the case? What if? And I started to really step back and look at people and try to look at it in a different way, and it was so revealing. It was so... So fresh. I started to see people in another light. And then I fell into habit again and stopped doing that for some reason, because we forget. And it's something we just have to keep doing all the time. We owe it to ourselves, just, and we owe it to everybody else, just so we don't tighten that contraction, that assumption that we know what's happening, that we know what's going on. I did a practice some years ago. I went through a period of a lot of negativity, and it seemed like everything that happened I just perceived in a negative way. And when it felt like whenever I had an idea, people didn't listen, but if somebody else said something or even the same thing, it got heard, you know. Oh, it's just so irritating. And I thought, oh, man, I'm going to be really sorry. If I don't get a hold on this, I'm going to say something that I'm going to regret. I'm going to do something that I'm really going to regret. And regret feels awful. And I don't want to keep doing that. I want to start catching it. And so I took on this practice, and I made this determination, this adhitana, okay? Every time I feel irritation in a situation when I'm interacting with people about something and I see this view coming up, I'm going to do everything I can when I see it to stop, to step back, and to try to think of at least one other way that circumstance, that situation might be looked at. And it was a really rich practice, very rich. And then, of course, I put it down after a certain amount of time, and I got a lot out of it and put it down for a while, but that's okay, too. Sometimes you have to put them down, pick them up again later, try something else for a while. You don't want to make it too complicated. You want to keep things simple but fresh. So we bring our creative skills into our practice. And our honesty. And in that honesty, it's not only honesty about where I'm tripping up. It's also being willing to be honest about where I'm getting it, where I see positive shifts. We have to bring balance into it. So important. And then we have to, one thing that's also really useful is tapping in to the sources of inspiration. So wherever you find those, if it's coming to the monastery and being around teachers that inspire you, or listening to Dhamma talks that inspire you, or being with, there's so much, if you live in California, you almost can't get away from Dhamma. It's so rich. There's so many opportunities. There's so many things offered. And if you live somewhere else, and I'm sure there's things, you just have to look for them and see what you can find. Find a place where you can tap into a day long once in a while, just to help you remember to bring that into your day, that kind of attentiveness into your practice. Treat yourself on your day off from work or your routine. I think it's about every 2 months up at the monastery. There's an Upasaka day, and that's open to anybody who wants to come. Upasaka just means one who draws near. And the next one, Ajahn Kunadamo is going to be teaching about the Mangala Sutta, which is a lovely sutta. So that's another way, is tapping in that way. Or when you can get some time away, like you've done for this 10-day period, take a 10-day retreat. Or come and spend time at the monastery and tap into the daily routine of the community. Talk to your friends, tap into your Kalyanamitta, that's essential. Because it's also by sharing these things. I've noticed sometimes with the monastics, they'll, especially the younger ones, they'll sometimes get together with one of their monastic brothers, and they'll go over things they want to work with, and they'll actually work with that person. This is what I want to, these are the determinations I'm making, the skills that I want to try to develop, and the things that I want to try to put down. And then they get together periodically and they talk about it. How's that going? And we can do that too. It's very useful, very helpful. Tapping in, checking to see what's difficult and why is it difficult. And we have so much to learn from each other, just because we all kind of come from different conditioning and we hone in on different things in different ways. That's why listening to Dhamma from different teachers is really useful. Because I used to marvel on the early days at Abhayagiri, because Ajahn Amaro and Lumpa used to say the same things, but they said it so differently. That it just was, it would open different doors, you know, of awareness into what they were saying, just by just a different presentation. Simple determinations. You don't want to, Stephen Levine used to always say, don't pick up the 500-pound weight, start with a 10-pound weight first. So pick up little things that you can do that you can take on as an aditana. What's a useful thing to take on? What is something that you think you need every day that maybe you can pick up as something you don't? Just this one week, I'm not gonna do that. I'm not going to turn the radio on when I first get into my car. Or I used to do one where I'd say, okay, Abhayagiri sometimes, you know, they just put the food out and then we go through and help ourselves. And sometimes the dessert table was just full of all kinds of delightful little sugary things. And you know, there's not a lot of outlet at the monastery for your sensual desires. So you get to the you get to that food and you get to that dessert table, and sometimes you'll sit down and go, wow, how did I end up with all these things in my pole? Who put them there? So I would make this determination that, well, one time I made the determination, okay, I'm not going to take any desserts for the whole rains retreat, which is the the Vasa, the 3 month period from the full moon of July till the full moon of October. I'm not going to take any desserts in this period. And that was fine. It was actually easy, but what I realized I was doing is I would just go down the table, and as soon as I got to the fruit, and the next thing you know is going to be the desserts, I just didn't look. I just walked away. So I thought, well, okay, so I did it, and that's good, but maybe I can put a little bit more of a challenge in there. So then I said, okay, one dessert. One. Well, then I started seeing the mind bartering. Well, those cookies are just little. So maybe it's one spoon of cookies. Or maybe the brownie with the ice cream on top is one dessert. And I'd have to really go, no, 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 one. So I actually found that much more fruitful because I started to learn about this bartering mind. And it wasn't a really harmless stuff, but very instructive. So things like that, that you can bring in and be willing to see these things and be willing to bring your sense of humor into it too and laugh about it, because it is pretty funny. We're the best video going around. And sometimes it's really hard, and we just need to figure out what do we need in this moment. I'm struggling. This all is so routine, and I feel like I'm not getting anywhere. I've been doing this for 25 years. I feel like I haven't learned a thing. I'm making the same mistakes. I'm still getting irritated. I'm da 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 da. I'm sure you've all heard the tape before. So what can we bring in at that moment? Because the one thing that you can be sure of is if you've really been practicing for a long time, you're going to notice it at some point, and probably a lot sooner than you noticed it when you started the practice. And so, okay, that's there it is again. What can I do? What can I bring in to balance that? Not contrived. What really is useful? What's going to really help me soften to this? What's going to help me learn from this? That willingness to go back and review what happened and where did it start to go off track in a way that I really would rather it hadn't. There's so many things that we can bring in. It's just remembering to do it. And it's just hard to remember to remember. It's we just really slip into our habits so quickly. And it's so important that we don't do that. And so as we begin to, I'm not saying the retreat's over, don't go there. We still have time to enjoy this peace, this space, the physical support of other people with similar aspirations. Take advantage of that. I'm sure there's times when the mind starts to go out, because that's really common as the retreat comes towards an end. But I'm just thinking as we do go out, to watch those, especially initially, what's that knee-jerk thing that first happens? Is it to run off to Pete's? Or is it to, you know what I mean? And that, you know, these are little things, they're not harmful things, but it's really good to be aware of them. What is it that I feel like I've done without that it's really, retreats are really funny because we really look forward to them, and we're happy that we're going to get quiet and time, and then when they're ending, there's this part of the mind that's really looking forward to it. So we're just fickle. The mind's just fickle. So finding ways of supporting ourselves, finding Kalyanamitta, finding ways of supporting each other, being willing to see our faults, being willing to pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and start again. Being willing to help others. Learning from our own mistakes and taking that in a way that we can then help others to see theirs. Not in a way where we're pointing fingers, but sometimes somebody maybe comes at you in a way that's really strong energy or something, and how can I react in a way that's useful to both of us? And I can't tell you because it's circumstance dependent. And then I actually, there was one question that came up about being with family, and family's been a great practice. Family's been a really good practice. So they're the best because they're the ones who put the buttons there. So they're the ones where they're already down before we even get there. It's like I was saying earlier. So take on that practice if you're with family. What are you already assuming? What are your assumptions? And how might you try to step back? And one other way of seeing that person, one other way of looking at what they're doing, it's through understanding ourselves that we understand others, and it's through understanding others that we understand ourselves. And everybody has something to teach us in some way or another. It's being open to that possibility. And yes, you don't want to, if something's not helpful, if it's really unskillful, then you just gracefully separate yourself from it without condemning, without criticizing. So it's just skills that we can develop, skills that we can bring into our practice in everything that we do that enrichen our lives. And then we're kind of taking the Dhamma into the world. And it's a great gift. So I think those are just some reflections that have been coming up for me. I think I'll just leave it there and hope some of it's useful or tickles some ideas for you of how can you bring creativity into your practice to keep it fresh and alive.
Sorry.